This programme was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, Irirangi Tumotu, MPR.
Listening to live and on-demand shows has never been easier on MPR. All you have to do is go to the App Store or Play Store on your device and search up Access Internet Radio NZ. Select and download the first option at the top of the list. Once you've downloaded the app, the next step is to open the app and look for MPR. Once found, select it and then browse freely. Supported by New Zealand On Air.
Hi, I'm Greg Watson, and this is the show Property Matters, where we talk all things property, including buying, selling, renting, commercial, you name it, whatever's happening. And in this show, I've decided this week that we might look at a real range of topics. We would normally have a bit of a news report on what's happening with the market locally, nationally, and sometimes internationally. But today, I'm just going to rip into a wide range of stories. We've got Star Trek-themed mansions. We've got luxury mansions in Auckland. We've got all sorts of things to talk about that it's going to be a bit of fun. So let's get on task. And the first article is about a Star Trek-themed mansion is back on the market. And my mate Phil would love this, being a huge Star Trek fan. Mark Bell, who's known from, Penthouse magazine fame in terms of how he built his wealth, his Florida mansion actually has an 11-seat theatre in the style of a starship bridge. So it's a bit like being in Star Trek. So it's designed like the bridge of a Star Trek spaceship, and the home also has a games room bigger than your average house. So he's also a theatre producer as well, Mark Bell, and so he has a huge collection of movie memorabilia, which is something else. And this article was in the lifestyle section on stuff.co.nz, and it's well worth a look at some of the pictures. So it first went on the market back in 2014, but Bell reported in the New York Post at the time that his teenage kids begged to be allowed to stay until they finished high school. I would too. The whole place looks like an awesome playground. So it's priced at around $30 million. That's almost 45 New Zealand million dollars. It's now back on the market at a bargain price of closer to 37 million New Zealand dollars for sale by the owner. So it's a 2,500 square metre home. It's on 1.6 acres of land, and it's in a gated community in the much sought-after Boca Raton area in Florida. And you also get membership to a country club and private security. So the hard thing with radio is being able to describe to you what this place actually looks like. But it does include some of the things like the 11-seat theatre, as I mentioned, like the bridge of the USS Enterprise. It's even got a Call of Duty gaming room with camouflage wall coverings, a massive pinball arcade, a games room or a ballroom if you want to use it for that. There's a gym and spa suite, a 5-metre outdoor swimming pool with a waterfall, a spa pool that fits 20, and even an underwater sound system. Why? Well, I guess it's just a case of why not. So it's a real draw for people who want something a little bit different. If they don't want something different, then you'd have quite a bit of work to do. One cool thing about the theatre, the Star Trek-themed theatre, is that it's got a 10-foot screen with a vibrating floor, so you can get a physical feel for the action that's happening. So Mark Bell's memorabilia collection that's within the house is worth about $1 million, they say. And for those of you who are more interested in the rather mundane details of the house, it has 13 bathrooms, 9 bedrooms, 2 double garages, and an incredible-looking kitchen. But it's actually, from the outside, a Tuscan villa-style building built in 2006. Mark Bell and his family actually opened up their home after Hurricane Irma in 2017 and let 70 foster kids stay there. So he's, even though he may have earned some of his money through means that not all of us would approve of, he is quite a generous person. So if you can't afford the Star Trek mansion, there's an article that I found on stuff.co.nz that talks about co-living. And it says, why co-living's a growing trend, not just amongst millennials? Now, in Australia, in fact, in Sydney to be specifically, there's several co-living properties have been developed to meet the growing demand. And these are usually properties with private rooms but shared living areas. And it's sort of like the 21st century version of dormitory living for adults. And it's a popular way for people in the city to be able to afford to live where real estate is otherwise prohibitively expensive. And so they don't need to deal about that with that. They don't need to deal with social isolation either or environmental pressures. So it's billed as co-living. It's the residential equivalent, I suppose, to co-working spaces, although there are some parallels to some of the older concepts that we'd be familiar with around this area, such as boarding houses and university accommodation. So there's been a number of these that have opened up, and they say that millennials are very much drawn to this, those with some disposable income out of university but still craving the social aspect they used to get in the university, college or share house. So they typically feature these private rooms, which is your own individual space, but with large common areas. And the prices are usually similar to market rent or higher, but they include all of the utilities and internet with flexible terms for short and long stays. This is a concept which has really taken off in Europe, Asia and North America, and there's some very large co-living operators that do that. So the reason that they did this was because they were targeting millennials, really. But what they've found, according to the CEO of UCO, which is one of the co-living providers, he said that they thought that of the young people, well, they've actually ended up with a lot of people in their 60s. So you get that nice combination of your own personal space, but you can mix with people when you want to, because often there is also a small ability to cook in your own room. Yet there's also communal kitchens and so forth if you're more socially inclined. And here's a trend that's been identified in the lifestyle section of stuff.co.nz, the article called Let Timber Grow on You. And it shows some lovely photos of architects using timber in really interesting ways in homes. Timber ceilings, for example, which give a nice warm feeling for living areas. And this is something that could become a bit of a trend. It's simply raw, honest, it's textural, and you wouldn't think of those sort of descriptive words as describing the interiors of homes, but a lot of people apparently are seeking a more organic and natural look, and those are the sort of descriptions that are being used by designers and suppliers. So locally, architects have generally been using concrete, timber, stone and bricks for the beauty of housing for decades. And it sits quite well in New Zealand, the timber aesthetic, because it's a history of building homes and building materials. There was a lot of wood in the earlier days. But using the natural materials isn't, according to this article, just about being rustic or opting for a country look. It can also look sleek and architectural, and that's why I'd encourage you to look at this article. You could probably just search the Stuff site for the words Let Timber Grow on You. So there's some really good examples of timber used in bathrooms, in ceilings, cupboards. And one thing that people tend to like about it is that it has a sort of an infinite variety of natural markings and grain. So every piece of timber is a bit different, and it looks and feels warm, it absorbs sound, and studies have shown that, according to the article, that timber in buildings actually influences people's behaviour in a positive way, in that if you can mimic the feeling of being outside in nature, so it's the ultimate comfort material. I mean, I'm a fan of natural timber looks inside homes, and yeah, it does have that natural sort of log cabin feel sometimes, notwithstanding the fact that these days you can use it for a wide range of purposes. So that's quite an interesting article which you might want to have a look at. So moving on and thinking about some of my friends and how things are going on their property buying journey, there is an article on Stuff called Is It a Good Idea to Buy Property with a Sibling? And it's actually quite an interesting article. They're really talking about pooling resources with a trusting sibling, and that can make it easier to get on the property ladder. So if you can find a dream home but you can't afford it, sometimes if you pool your resources, you can buy it together. So let's have a talk about this, as house prices are prohibitive to many people. But generally, according to Teeds Webster, who's a psychologist, she said that in her experience, it's been positive overall. So she actually purchased a house with her sister and says it's not just a housemate. You have a deep relationship with them, she says. It gave me the opportunity to get a foot into the Sydney real estate market that I couldn't have done by myself at that time. But that meant that the sisters were both in their 20s when they purchased the home. So I think it's a good way of getting started to get on that property ladder. They did say something pretty important, though, which you should consider if looking at going into arrangement like this. They said, we did make an agreement when we bought that we would commit to 3 years living there. And as it turned out, she says she stayed there 5 years until she got married in 2005. When it came to selling, they had an arrangement where her sister ended up buying out her half. So it's generally a good idea to have an agreed time frame for how long you'll keep the property. But it is another option for siblings to do to get on the property ladder is to actually buy an investment property together. And so sometimes people can get knocked back by when trying to get a loan. But there's examples in the article of a man who wasn't allowed a loan, but when he joined forces with his older sister, he managed to realise his goal, which was purchasing a property by the age of 30. So that's pretty cool, because as we know, once you're underway on the property ladder, it becomes easier. You can build some equity in the house and then look forward to getting into your own home more quickly. Westpac did a study, and in 2017, this was Westpac in Australia, only 14% of aspiring first home buyers said they would consider purchasing a property with someone other than a spouse or parent. So it's not a real big idea. But there's actually a service, a digital platform, which connects people who want to co-own a property, so not surprisingly. It's called Cohab, K-O-H-A-B. And David Dawson, the founder of Cohab, thinks co-buying with the right person is a good solution to the issue of housing affordability, because they've had massive problems. Even though this is an Australian article, there's parallels here in New Zealand. So co-ownership gives young people the entry into ownership or a foot on the ladder. I mean, why do you need to own the entire property? Most people buy a property and own that property with the bank anyway, and he says, why not buy a property with a sibling, friend or parent that gives benefit to both parties? A co-ownership agreement is essential in these circumstances if you're buying with someone other than a spouse. And what a co-ownership agreement is a legally binding contract that allows the parties to split the title of the property and to be able to obtain loans independently, to be assessed on their income and their ability to repay the debt individually. And as well as any mortgage arrangements, the experts would be the first to tell you that if you're buying with anyone other than a spouse, you should get one of these co-ownership agreements. So a traditional bank loan assesses you on your ability to pay the whole amount if the other person defaults. But if they buy under a co-ownership agreement, you might not want to inherit the debt of another person, say if they die or something like that. So again, probably putting a time frame on things is also very good to protect yourself. So we're going to have a little break now here on Property Matters. You're here with Greg Watson. Just going to play a little bit of music by one of my bands that I enjoy, Imagine Dragons. This is Radioactive.
Apocalypse. Whoa, I'm waking up. I feel it.
And you're back with Property Matters. I'm Greg Watson. Thanks for joining us today. That was Imagine Dragons with Radioactive. So well, let's look at some of the news articles just in a general sense today. We're ducking and diving internationally, nationally and so forth. And here's a headline from stuff.co.nz. Recently it says, beach-loving New Zealanders living near rising seas could face relocation plans within a decade. And it talks about the effect that global warming or erosion, rising sea levels, etc., is having on certain areas of New Zealand. So it's quite an interesting article. And it gives examples of damage from around the country that's been caused by having property or roading close to the coast. Beach Road near Oamaru was closed in May 2014 after a rock shelf fell away beneath it. Now, this is on stuff.co.nz under their environmental section. You can see some pictures that are pretty stunning. And they say that New Zealanders love living on coasts, but plans to move them away from rising seas could start within 10 years. And near to us in the Manawatū, of course, is the Kapiti Coast, is one of those areas. And this week, the Greater Wellington Regional Council has proposed establishing a 40-metre erosion zone to protect the coastline that's falling into the sea. And that would potentially mean relocating several buildings. And NIWA Program Hazard and Risk Leader Dr. Rob Bell said communities through New Zealand needed to plan for a managed retreat, effectively moving away from the coasts. The Hawke's Bay Regional Council is already looking at the effect of climate change on the coast, particularly south of Napier at Clifton and Clive. But it wasn't always easy having a conversation which people's homes could be affected, the article says. Particularly with coastal communities, there is also that aspect of place-based attachment where people love to live at the coast. So the Greater Wellington Regional Council, as I mentioned, has proposed this 40-metre buffer zone where the erosion is rather obvious. What they say about their people living there is that they'll probably put up with quite a lot of nuisance flooding before they even consider a move, or the council itself might just wait for a while before even putting up walls. So it wasn't just an issue for a handful of areas. There needs to be a national conversation about a managed retreat. How do we do it? How do we do it responsibly? And how do communities do it? Could include things like funding to help people relocate, which I don't know if I'm a fan of, because I figure if you buy a property in an area like that, that is a higher risk of things like flooding and erosion. But the article just says it could mean funding to help people relocate. At Piha, which is the popular beach west of Auckland, the car park there has been moved backwards to create an erosion buffer. And in Coromandel, a suburb built on reclaimed land, Moana Taiari is slowly sinking. Sorry about the pronunciation. Some of that land is actually now below sea level, meaning that at high tide, the water level can rise above the houses. In the South Island, and it's been in the news recently, erosion on Beach Road near Oamaru has exposed two unofficial landfill sites, causing them to spill waste to a beach. You might have seen that in the news reasonably recently. So local government president, New Zealand president Dave Cole said all those in coastal areas should be concerned. And at least in Kapiti, he says it's an example of a council taking action, and councils everywhere should be doing it as well. So just watch that space with regards to, just something to consider if buying near water, particularly the ocean. So the New Zealand Herald had a pretty cool article online, and I might direct you to this one. It was under their business section, and it's about the new apartment complex in Prince's Street in Auckland called the International, and it raises some details and gives us some pictures and some interesting descriptions of the new luxury $250 million apartment complex They say that sports stars, filmmakers, business leaders, lawyers, young professionals and even empty nesters have bought units, which are sold for up to $15.3 million in this 90-unit Auckland apartment project. So it's converting what was the Sanctuary Group, and Gary Groves, who's comments on this article, is saying that they're converting the ex-Fonterra headquarters at 9 Princes Street into a 17-level residential block, The International. He even went so far as to say some of New Zealand's highest profile people were his buyers, paying deposits for the high-spec units, which are due to be finished this year. Of course, if you're a developer, you would say that there's famous people going in to attract more people, wouldn't you? He said that there's a high-profile sports people, captains of industry, movie makers, business people, those are the kids at university, there's quite a stretch. So the Herald, New Zealand Herald, went to go and have a look at the first finished apartment. And actually one person who has purchased one of them apparently is the ex-General Motors Chief Financial Officer, Chris Liddell. Last year paid for a penthouse on level 17, although his name wasn't confirmed. But he did confirm that that was the price that the penthouse sold for. He says generally that New Zealanders returning from living overseas or young professionals, people wanting to leave the suburbs and the CBD were the other buyers. So the places, depending on which floor they're on, they're generally 178 square metres, two-bedroom, two-bathroom, city-facing apartments with a conservatory off the lounge, kitchen, dining area, and those places tend to go for 2.7 to 3.1 million, depending on what floor they're on. And some of the, why is that price so high? Well, some of the luxury features are things like solid Italian travertine kitchen bathrooms and tile grains, German Miele appliances, walls of walk-in cupboards, which sounds interesting. I do like design features. It'll be interesting to have a look, and the photographs show some of it. American oak timber flooring, carpeted bedrooms, internal stud heights of 3 to 3.2 metres, so really spacious, full air conditioning, keyless entry, double glazing, of course, which there is for acoustics and warmth these days. Just a lot of interesting features, so you can go and have a look at that. I'm sure you could Google The International to find more details. So the ground floor entranceway is quite grand. It has a three-level high internal lobby, three lifts and some communal facilities. There's a library, a landscaped area, outdoor heated pool, private wine cellar, private dining area, a 20-seat movie theatre, concierge service and IT support. So the apartment buyers are due to move in later this year. And they've actually put a bit of a exoskeleton, if you're familiar with the area, applied to the building, which has restored the historic facade. So if you're living there, you're not allowed to rent out the properties. So it can't become – well, actually, I should say that you can rent them out, but for no less than 6 months. So they're not going to be Airbnbs or anything similar, but that's something – so they've got a few covenants around that as well. So the people who are buying these apartments, we're wanting to be in a community of like-minded people rather than being in a building that's sort of feels like half a hotel or there's strangers in the lift. So Sanctuary Group that Groves works for had pre-sold 80 of the 90 units and would hold open days until most of the places went, and then they'll retain ownership of some of them. So interesting that the demand is there. And at least for the time being, and there's, if you want to be up close to the top, apart from the penthouse which is gone, the other ones are being marketed on levels 15 and 16 for 6.5 to 7.5 million, and those are quite a lot larger, 265 square metres or up to 328 square metres, and so yeah, really quite grand indeed. Some of us can dream of these things, particularly in the rural areas like myself. And finally, we'll change tack to rental law, where tenants have been made to pay $8,000 for damaging a deck while cleaning it. So a couple have been ordered to pay their landlord more than $8,000 for damaging the deck. It was a 160-metre Quila deck in their Queenstown Lakes home while they were water blasting it. So the tenants did not ask their landlord's permission before water blasting the deck. The Tenancy Tribunal heard the tenants also failed to test it on a small area provided to cleaning the whole deck. Now, tenants are not required to pay for the cost of repairing damage in a number of circumstances, including where the damage is caused by fire or is of a kind covered by the landlord's insurance. But tenants are actually liable, remember, if the damage is intentional and the tenant is required to pay the cost of repairs. So the tribunal decided because the landlord's insurance did not cover damage caused during cleaning, and accordingly the tenant doesn't benefit from the protection of that insurance, the tenants were ordered to pay over $8,500 in compensation for damaging the deck. Talk about trying to do something nice and it totally backfiring. But it's just important to be aware of the laws, whether you're a tenant or a landlord, and really just to make sure that what you're doing is not going to get you into trouble. The amount of times that people in Tenancy Tribunal have to pay out money for being well-meaning and then having it backfire on them is actually surprisingly high. And this includes landlords who are trying to look after tenants but going about it the wrong way. When things turn sour, the tenants can make them pay for any legal indiscretions. On that cheery note, I'll leave you for this week. This is Property Matters with Greg Watson. I hope you've enjoyed the show. A little bit of a mixed bag today, and we look forward to bringing you our next show in around a week's time. Thanks for listening. Thanks to NPR.nz.
Support this program and others like it by giving a donation to NPR. More details at npr.nz.